So I was going to apologize for hearing you would hear the bells, and since we're 10 minutes late, here they go. I wanted to thank the organizers. I'm honored to be in this workshop, which is, as expected, proven very interesting. And I'm going to, I'm interested these days in investigating the line of work that Roger has already introduced, and I'll kind of assume some of the things he said, and also Marco. So investigating if generic learners we use currently in NLP develop properties of language that are both in accordance to what we know of the phenomena, but then I will also move to one case study to see if they learn in accordance to the language-specific mechanisms proposed by linguistic theory. And the particular topic I want to discuss that luckily came up yesterday several times is the notion of similarity. So all speakers can understand a sentence that they've never heard before, derive the meaning of words, children can learn any language they are exposed to, but these basic linguistic skills have proven very hard for computational models. We have very successful machine learning architectures and models, but as has already been said, they are based on computationally expensive algorithms and prohibitively large amounts of data. And this is a problem not just because the amount of data is unrealistic, but also because it's so prohibitive that they can be deployed only for a few non-representative languages. So in fact, in natural language processing, we had with difficulty moved to much more attention to comparative studies and multilingual studies. And my opinion on that front, we're aggressing a bit, which is clearly not a linguistic point of view. So how do we bridge the gap? So in thinking about what to talk about for this workshop, and inspired by Luigi's work in linguistics here at the Collège de France, I think it's useful to think about a core difference in thinking conceptually on the study of language, a difference that I think we will have to bridge. Linguistics, we are used to thinking about complex representations with operations that are mechanically simple. And in natural language processing, I give you here some pictures to just make the point. In natural language processing, the opposite path has been taken. We have gone for relatively simple, multidimensional, unstructured spaces, but the architectures to learn them and manipulate them have become very complex, and they're definitely nonlinear. But I would like to say the simplicity of the structure building operations in linguistics is actually deceptive. It's apparent because, in fact, computationally, they are complex because they're compositional operations. So even if merge is the simplest compositional operation, it still requires computationally to have an operation that performs variable binding, because we're creating, we're composing things, and we're creating new composed objects that are added to the distributed space. And this operation is, it seems to me, fundamentally different from an operation of similarity, which is what fundamentally is what we use in distributed spaces. So I want to discuss today what is really this notion of similarity that we use in distributed spaces, and what phenomena and representations does it capture? And I will start with a relatively simple notion of similarity, which is a notion of association, free association. The basic assumption about distributed spaces is that they represent the meaning of words by encoding their context of use, so that similar words are represented closely together. So to determine what notion of similarity is encoded here, I will look at two notions. One that is associations, just free associations monolingually, and then effects of transfer in multilingual lexica, so effects that we find in bilingual speakers. And I will show, at least I will argue, that we found a good correspondence between the distributed spaces calculated by our deep learning models and this kind of phenomena. And then I will move to a notion of similarity that comes from syntax. Syntax doesn't have, at least I couldn't think of many, but there is one very core notion of similarity, which is the similarity that is used in specific in intervention theory to calculate locality effects. And I will show that that kind of similarity is less well represented by our current spaces. The work I will be describing here has been done collaborative. The citations were given in the previous slides. These are the people that have been the most closely associated with this work. I'm the one in the middle with a cake on the head, but many other people have been influential in talking to me and developing the ideas. So, when in studying word associations, we study the lexicon, the lexical semantics. It's a way of tapping the lexical semantics and the lexical organization. And previous work has prominently argued that human lexical knowledge and word associations are not well represented in distributed spaces, in particular because they do not show the properties of distances. Associations violate a symmetry of similarity. They show a symmetry of similarity, and they violate the triangle inequality. So that had been used, at least in the 70s, to argue that geometric distributional spaces were not appropriate. Our current word embeddings are contextualized. And it is true that they are represented as multidimensional spaces. They represent lexical semantic knowledge that way. But the word representations are contextualized. So it is possible that the context generates asymmetric spaces. So I will use measures and the reasoning comparable to the two previous pieces of work indicated here. And I will discuss three properties. The asymmetry of similarity and the triangle inequality. I'll go fast on the notion of rank. The notion of rank is simply that I want to check as a first, very simple measure that the word associations that are generated by eliciting word associations in people have roughly the same structure and the same closeness of similarity as what we get in these distributed spaces. So I will use the word embeddings produced by BERT, so by a transformer, depending on the experiment in context and not in context. And the word associations I'm looking at are the norms collected by the University of South Florida, a very large study of norms. And I'm talking about English here because this is a very large study. You have an example of a word associations in the first line of the picture. And as you can see, if you look at the column of the word saw, they are usually collected without distinguishing word senses. So saw is obviously polysemous and all the associates are collected. For the sake of time, I will just comment this measure. This measure gives you, for the first associate in a human space, what is a median rank of the words, of the associates of the words in the bird space. And the median rank is 3. So the words that on average are first, for a word where the associate is first in the human space, the median rank is 3. The other model that we have that has been proposed to explain this kind of associations was the Bayesian topic modeling by the Griffiths, Stivers, and Tenenbaum, and their rank for first rank was 50. So this is, I think, a reasonably good space. So I will just assume that it's good enough that we can do the investigations that follow. And I think more intriguing than just quantification of ranking measures, there are these properties of spaces that are non-geometric. So a symmetry of similarity. It has been observed that in contexts that elicit similarity, like the ones shown on the right, A is similar to B, the more prominent word is preferentially the second element in the similarity. So people much prefer the sentence, North Korea is more similar to China, to the sentence that China is, North Korea is similar to China, rather than the sentence China is similar to North Korea. So we have replicated this study with the same country names that were used in Tversky. We have updated it because that study was done in the 70s. Some countries don't exist anymore and some new have appeared. But basically the results, and we have contextualized the embeddings for the country names in the same context that were used by Tversky, this kind of semantically fairly neutral similarity eliciting context. And we do find that, so we construct sentences like, for us, B, notice that for us, A refers to the more prominent country and B refers to the less prominent country. So people prefer B is similar to A. And we find that the cosine of B to A is higher than the cosine of A is similar to B in all the contexts. So apparently this similarity spaces have a symmetry of similarity. And notice that for people, this had also been explained as an effect of frequency. Usually what is called the target, so the word that is elicited by the association, is more frequent in the human norms. In the bird context, in the birding context, they are not. So we do reproduce the similarity, but we have a slightly different behavior on frequency of words. So in a way, it's not an effect of frequency for the transformer spaces, but we don't match humans on frequency effects. The other asymmetry is the violation of a triangle inequality. And here, it's another observation that was used to argue that these geometric spaces are not appropriate. So it is fairly, the common example is that asteroid is highly associated to belt. Belt is highly associated to buckle, but asteroid and buckle have little association. Clearly, because there is a change of semantic sense in the word in the middle of this triple. So we can measure this both in the human norms and in the constructed distributed spaces. So on the human side, we extracted these kind of triples, one associated to red, red associated to hair, is wine associated to hair. I will call these pivot triples, so couples of pairs of words that share one word, W1, W2, W2, W3, where W2 is the same word. And we do the same in the bird word embeddings. First, we contextualize the word embeddings, and then we extract the associations from the word embedding space by using the technique that was developed by Griffith et al. Basically, we set a threshold tau and extract the pairs W1, W2, and W2, W3, whose cosine is greater than tau. Then for each of these triples, we quantify how many W1, W3 pairs exist in the human associations as a Q target pair. If the pair exists and W1, W3 is greater than tau in the embedding space, then birds' embeddings also show transitivity. If the pair is in the human space, but W1, W3 is less than tau, then W1, W3 in bird does not reflect the transitivity in humans. And if the pair does not exist and is less than tau, then there is lack of transitivity, so violation of triangle inequality, both in the humans and in bird embeddings. And so having this quantity, I can calculate precision and recalls of all these measures. And Christophe has explained yesterday, for those who don't use these measures, precision and recall. But the figure here basically shows precision and recalls measure of pairs that do not violate triangle inequality and those that do. I'll concentrate on those that do because that's the thing that interests us, and the blue lines. And so the solid line is a recall. The dotted line is the larger, the hyphenated lines is a precision, and the dotted line is a F measure, so the kind of the harmonic mean of these two measures. And as you can see, for increasing values of tau, the values of tau are here on the x-axis. For increasing values of tau, both these measures, this one sort of stays the same, and so the other two measures increase, so that we can say that there is a violation of triangle inequality in these spaces too, and that it conforms reasonably well with human the human situation. So it appears that the properties of free association, so this notion of similarity that is kind of free semantic association, is represented in word embeddings. I will assume that if I had tried it for a different language, I would have found probably reasonably similar effects. The experiment was done in English, so I did not replicate it on a different language, although we now have French norms and we might decide to do it on French. But the next question on similarity, to just check that there is something cross-lingual, or you know, there's something that applies to several languages, is whether the matching structure of distributed representations carries across languages. And there I'm interested in seeing the similarities that have been found in the bilingual lexicon. In the bilingual lexicon, fascinating interactions have been found between the form and the meaning of words. And this is interesting because the bilingual it is usually assumed that the bilingual lexicon is an integrated space of distributed word representations where word forms from different languages share the same space. So this goes back to a question that has been asked several times yesterday: is this all the shared, the same shared space? So the question is, if we have, we can construct bilingual word embeddings. We know how to do that. There are several algorithms. My team has developed a method based on adversarial learning. If we build cross-lingual word embeddings, do they show the same integrated structure? And here I want to show three effects that have been found in bilinguals: the shared translation effect and the false and true friends interactions. The shared translation effect comes up when you have polysemous words. Polysemous words can have many translations, one for each sense. So in English, the word wood it translates as bois in French. It maintains its ambiguity. But in Italian, the translation splits for the two senses. So there's a word for the material, legno, and there's a word for the collection of trees, bosco. So it has been found that in bilingual speakers, there is a shared translation effect. Hebrew-English bilinguals were asked by Degani et al. 2011, I have a citation there. Hebrew-English bilinguals were asked to rate the semantic similarity of English word pairs that shared a translation in Hebrew. I believe the paper here that the word kli is both dish and tool. So the word dish and tool in English share the translation in Hebrew. And compared to both English pairs with different Hebrew translations and to ratings by monolingual English speakers, the bilinguals judged the shared translation pairs as more related in meaning. So we can see if word embedding space have the same effect. We build list of words that share a translation, translation pairs in Italian and English, as exemplified by the word wood. And we do find that the pairs that share a translation are more similar in a cross-lingual space than in a comparable monolingual space, while pairs of words that do not have a shared translation do not. And the other effect are false friends and true friends effects. We all speak a foreign language. We've all been victim of false friends. There are competition and facilitation effects that arise depending on the convergence and divergence of the four meaning mappings in translations. So false friends are those words that are hard to learn, those words that are cross-linguistically similar in form, but not in meaning. So like the example is bald, baldo, bald means hairless in English. It looks a lot like baldo, but in fact, baldo is bald in English. We don't know. It's actually very complex form meaning mapping. Well, there are true friends effects where you have words that share both form and meaning. And these kind of convergences and divergences create complex interactions. I'll give you just some examples. There's a vast literature on this. In a cross-modal picture decision task, Weber and Cutler in 2004 found that Dutch English speakers are slower in matching the English word desk to the picture of a desk if among the alternative pictures, there is a picture of a lid, which in Dutch is desken. And more directly, the true friends effect is instead that, for example, Spanish speakers that need to name pictures in Spanish are faster to do so if in Catalan the word is a true friend, which is gut. So here we built lists of words of this kind. False friends, the words the same form but semantically different. The list of real translations for the false friends. So the real translation of bald in Italian is calvo. The true friends, future, futuro. The normal translations, just what we're used to thinking of as translation and uncorrelated words. And for humans in their picture naming speed and accuracy, we see if we match the what has been found in the literature, and we do confirm all the hypotheses. So the true friends are the faster, they match in form and meaning. They're faster than normal translations. Normal translations are faster than the real translations of false friends because the false friend creates an interfering effect. The real translation is, I shouldn't say faster. Here is a similarity in embedding space I'm talking about. The real translation is closer in embedding space than false friends, and the false friends are closer than uncorrelated pairs. So in the embedding space, we have the same similarity structure that we find in humans, and there's a total order of similarity. The two extremes of a total order are not surprising, I think. If you match both in form and meaning, you're obviously more similar than if you don't match in either form or meaning. What is more interesting is the middle, because the fact that normal translations that match in meaning are closer than the false friends that match in form means that meaning, when you have a mismatch of one of the dimensions, the meaning dimension is stronger and it's determines the similarity space more strongly. So these are the results for the lexicon. So I think that we can conclude that there is a reasonably good correspondence with the notion of similarity in the lexicon, both monolingually and cross-lingually. But so the lexicon is a kind of static organization. And so I want to see if there is a notion of similarity that is represented in these in distributed spaces in syntax. And I should add something that I should have said at the beginning. There is no training here. I didn't do any retraining because I really wanted to see what is the space of a generic learner that has not been trained for any of these problems. What is the space they build? So we look at notions of similarity in syntax, and in particular, the notion of similarity that determine the long distance compositional operations in that determine locality, as proposed by intervention locality. So it actually acts, this answers Luigi's questions to Roger. We have done these experiments. But notice that we're moving here from trying to reproduce the phenomenon to investigating whether the network models and the spaces they build work in the same way as the theory predicts. So it's a more stringent requirement and it's a modeling of the theory. So the data we're looking at are data or long distance dependencies. So a core distinguishing property of human language is the ability to interpret discontinuous elements as if it were a single element. As Luigi illustrated in the introduction yesterday. So for example, here we have object relative clauses. The object of Andorre, the data here is in French. These are experiments on French. The object of anger has been relativized, which is the étudiant, has been relativized. So according to the theory, it has been moved, or at least there's a relationship between this position in the sentence and this position in the sentence. There's a long distance dependency, which is interpreted as a single element that we see in one place and we interpret in the other place. It is interpreted as the object of a verb andor is put to sleep, but also as the indirect object of the verb smiles. These object relatives, which I show here with a singular head of a relative clause and a plural head of a relative clause, are to be contrasted to normal completives where the embedded clause doesn't have any long distance dependency. So these are data that were kindly provided to me by Julie Frank and Sandra Villata, and they are the data discussed, some of the data discussed in a paper with Luigi Rizzi a few years ago. And so the question for the neural network side is, can neural network detect long distance dependencies? Do they use the mechanisms that the theory proposes? And can they use the same mechanisms in several languages? And so this investigation is related to the notion of similarity because there's a prominent theory, the intervention theory, the feature-based evolution of relativized minimality, that tells us that the long distance dependencies that occur in the presence of an intervener are harder than those long distance dependencies that don't have an intervener. An intervener is an element that is similar to the elements that need to be put in a long distance dependency relation. And similarity is usually defined as feature matching. And here the feature matching is the number agreement, is a number. So notice that the subject of a relative clause is always singular, and the subject of a completive is always singular. So it should be more of an intervener for the relative clause where the head of a relative clause is singular than where it is plural. And there was, and this experimental study did find an effect. In fact, it found a facilitatory effect of a mismatching condition. And there were other studies that found other kinds of effect. And of course, there are gradation in grammaticality, we know that, depending on how many features are matching. So I will just, so the question is, do we find the same effect if we run a neural network model? And here I will rely on, you know, in theory, there are other things I should be checking before reaching that experiment, but they have been done by other people and already discussed here. So I will just assume them and let me just remind them. So we know Marco has talked about this. We know that neural networks can detect agreement constraints at a distance. And in fact, with several attractors in between, they still manage to learn agreement. Roger has talked about island constraints, and I have replicated the studies for French in part. So we know that neural networks can detect long distance filler gap dependencies, and they can detect island constraints. The results are a little patchier here. We replicated only some of the islands for French, and depending on the architectures, Roger found differential effects, but there is an effect of island. And the third thing that we need to assume is that these are results that were found in experimental studies and that are found in grammaticality judgments. So we need to know that this data is present in the data that is given to the neural network. So in particular, that the text we feed the neural network has this effect. And we know that the texts have this effect because I've been pursuing a different line of work with Alone and with Giuseppe Samo. And we have developed a technique to demonstrate that the corpus frequencies of sentences where the theory tells us there are intervention effect are lower than expected. And we find very clear intervention effects, especially in clefts. So basically, I have all the ingredients that indicate that neural networks, and in particular here I'm using a transformer, should be able to detect intervention. And this is a graph. So what the transformer, this is a French version of BERT, is Flaubert for Italian. The sentence is what I showed you at the beginning. Je souris à l'étudiant que l'orateur endort sérieusement depuis le début. And we find a difference in structure. So the completive, which is shown here in orange ochre, is the measure is surprisal. So we find there's no surprisal effect for the completive. Is while there is a surprisal effect at the verb for the long distance dependency. So there is this is statistically significant. No other point is statistically significant. But so there is an effect of a long distance dependency. There isn't an effect of number. I unfortunately haven't found it. I have tried many measures and many techniques to find this difference in number, but I didn't find it. So it's already quite interesting that the transformer can identify this long distance dependency, because this long distance dependency is different from what Roger was saying, showing yesterday. These are all grammatical sentences. And so it's able to find this long distance dependency with an intervener, even in, you know, and distinguish it from another kind of grammatical sentence. We have a similar situation for English, although not as pronounced. But if we show, this is the situation with a transformer. This is a situation with a transformer here on the right. And on the left is a situation in English with an LSTM. And you see there's no long distance effect at all in the right, in the region where we should see a long distance effect. So this is prompts me to reflection on the architecture, to just follow up on what Marco was saying. The differences in architecture and who et al., Roger Levy's group, have found the same result in a large-scale study. Architectures matter a lot, and they're often the dominant effect. And so here it's interesting to think of why. And clearly the difference between this kind of architecture, which is a transformer, and LSTM, is attention. And so this is the kind of the observation that attention makes a difference. And attention is interesting for us because attention changes the nature of the architecture we're using. Attention is a technique that allows us, as Marco already showed, if you remember his graph, that allows you to go back in the sentence, and since these are bidirectional, even forward, and calculate relations with every other word in the sentence. And so in a way, these models are not really intrinsically sequential models anymore. And so to conclude, we can say that word embeddings have the same structure of free associations and the bilingual lexicon, but they do not encode the narrow notion of intervention similarity in long distance dependencies. So I would say the preliminary conclusion can be that similarity corresponds to some kind of semantic neighborhood that but does not correspond to a more grammatical-based notion of similarity. And then there are a couple of interesting explorations we can pursue. First of all, what is the role of attention? We all think of, conceptualize attention as a kind of memory. So what is the role of attention in these locality constructions? And can we use these models to disentangle the debate about narrow and broad intervention that Luigi was alluding to yesterday? So what are the features that are defined grammatically that matter, and what are the features that are perhaps more semantically or contextual that matter, and in the context of a precise architectural explanation? Thank you.